Welcome to Restore, a podcast seeking to restore the vision, restore the mission, restore the church. And now your host, Javier Diaz.
Hello and welcome once again to the Restore podcast, episode 7. It is our desire through these conversations that we have been having on this podcast to help restore the mission, restore the vision, restore the church. And I am your host, Javier. I want to start by thanking all those who have been listening to our podcast. It has been growing, and also I know some who have spoken to me how they have been blessed and to some extent challenged by what they have heard through the Restore podcast. Today, I'm also excited to begin to promote our upcoming Restore conference. As most of you who listen to our podcast know, that this conference started as an extension, or I should say this podcast started as an extension of our inaugural Restore conference. So mark the dates, here you go, January 30 and 31 of 2017 at the Forest City Seventh-day Adventist Worship Center. We are finalizing our lineup of speakers and breakout sessions, and I can tell you that Dr. Ed Stitzer has confirmed and will be coming to speak to us among many others. So please make sure to go and register today. You can do that at restorethemission.com, restorethemission.com. And this conference is, of course, for pastors, but we also encourage pastors to invite their leaders to come, listen, and both be inspired and challenged to go and restore the mission in their context. With that said, on today's episode, we are talking with the pastoral staff of the Miami Temple Seventh-day Adventist Church. And this is the largest English-speaking Adventist church in Miami, and I believe also one of the oldest. You'll hear me say this in the interview, but I personally still remember many years ago while I lived in Miami that Miami Temple was one of those churches in which when some people in Miami didn't want to go to their home church, they ended up visiting Miami Temple. I personally remember visiting it many times and sitting up in the balcony there and just, you know, worshiping and listening. Yet Miami Temple has gone through and still is ongoing through a transformational process that has empowered them to be on a journey, to be on the mission that God has called them within that sphere of influence there in Miami. So with all that said, here you go. So I want to welcome the staff of the Miami Temple Seventh-day Adventist Church to the Restore podcast. And thank you guys all for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Glad to be here.
All right.
Glad to be here.
So I'd like for each one of you guys to actually introduce yourself. So why don't we start with the senior pastor?
Good day. My name is Lafitte Cortez. I am the senior pastor here at Miami Temple. I've been here 2 years now. Last week marked my two-year anniversary of being here in Miami Temple.
All right.
Before coming to Miami Temple, I was the campus chaplain of Pacific Union College, where I was there for 3.5 years.
Okay. All right. Well, Lafitte, glad to have you on, and welcome to Miami, I guess, in the last 2 years. A little bit of a different place, huh?
Different place, but glad to be here. Thank you.
All right.
And my name is Morris Thompson. I'm the Associate Pastor of Discipleship at Miami Temple. I've been here for about a year and a half now. Prior to coming to Miami Temple, I was finishing my Master's of Divinity at Andrews University.
Okay. Well, Morris, glad to have you on. Thank you for being here. Tell us a little bit before I go on to the next two. Just in short, tell us a little bit what your duties are as the discipleship pastor at Miami Temple.
Well, my duties are primarily small groups and Sabbath school and developing a process of spiritual growth for new and incoming members.
Okay.
So I'm glad you.
All right. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Gervin Marsh. I'm the Associate with Responsibility for Evangelism at Miami Temple. I've been there for 2 years. I think I got there a Sabbath before Pastor Lafitte got there. So
oh, wow.
I am a Sabbath older than he is with Miami Temple. prior to going to Temple, I was at the seminary for 2 years. And prior to that, I was at Florida Conference for about 4 years working as a district pastor. Good to be here today.
All right. Thank you, Devon.
And lastly, we also have with us the first elder of the Miami Temple Church. So thank you for being here. Tell us your name and how long have you been there at Miami Temple?
Okay, my name is Will Neo Day. I'm a head elder at Miami Temple. Scary as it sounds, I've been associated with Miami Temple for 41 years. I was there when they had the first worship service at the new building in 1975. I have not lived in Miami all that time, but my family have been coming to Miami Temple all these years. I've been in and out of Miami. So I've been connected with that church for many, many years.
Okay. So thank you, Wilney, for joining us. And I think this is going to be a fascinating conversation because here we have three pastors that have been, including the senior pastor at Miami Temple for a combined 5 years with the church member leader that has been there in some shape, form or manner for multiple times over all three of them. Yet, and I would venture to say that in the last several years, there have been changes at Miami Temple. And so we want to talk a little bit about that. And we're glad that you are here, Wilney. You can keep us in check and give us your perspective, having been there 41 years and counting, by the way. And so let's get right into it. I'm going to start with Pastor Lafitte. As a senior pastor coming in, yes, you've been there 2 years. And again, any of you guys could definitely jump in once he's finished answering. But how would you describe the kind of church that Miami Temple was when you first arrived? And again, I'm already liking this because Wilney's going to keep us all in check because he's been there so long. He can verify through his perspective what is about to be said. So I think we're going to be here pretty fair and balanced. But Lafitte, how would you describe the kind of church that Miami Temple was when you first got there?
When I first arrived, I found a church, especially the leadership, because that's who I worked closely when I arrived, a church anticipating change, a church that was anticipating moving in a direction where, as Wilney described it to me in the interview, to wake up the sleeping giant.
Okay.
You know, Miami Temple was asleep, and now they wanted to work and get involved in ministry. And that's what I found when I first got here.
Okay. Would you say, as the outsider, would you say that Miami Temple was a church that was on mission, that was actively engaged in reaching its community and its sphere of influence?
They were doing many projects to reach out to the community, but I think they reached a point where they were comfortable and they were just ministering to each other. So that's when I walked in, that's what I found.
Okay. Wilney, what are your thoughts to that response? I mean, I'm sure you guys have spoken about this, and obviously I think you're on the same page, but let's get your thoughts on that.
We have. I think Pastor Lafitte was very kind in the way he described it. And from my perspective, we had been sleeping for a long, long while. And we were more involved into programs and programs that basically satisfied the biggest voices in the church. We were not really involved in active ministry in the community.
Okay. No, I appreciate that. And again, it's great because you haven't been there such a long time. You can definitely vouch, and somebody who knows what has been going on or what was going on and where it's at. And so, again, very good perspectives. A person, sometimes an outsider coming in, as technically Pastor Lafitte and all the pastoral staff was, they can get a different perspective. But it's great that the leadership there, yourself and I'm sure others, also understood or were understanding where the church was at the moment, at the place. So Pastor Gervon and Pastor Morris, what were your thoughts about what was just said as you guys were coming in? Obviously, there was youth coming in, meaning you guys are fairly young pastors. Morris is just about to get married. Praise the Lord. Hallelujah. Pastor Gervon just got married. You guys are in your 20s, if I'm not mistaken. So tell us your perspective coming in as you heard, Pastor Lafitte and also, you know, Wilney. Let's start with Pastor Gervon in that deep preacher's voice. What are your thoughts about where the church was when you first got there?
I share Wilney's perspective. When I got there, I saw a church that, of course, they have a lot of resources, both people and otherwise. But they were very program-oriented, and they had very good programs. I won't deny that. For example, they had a program which was geared towards ministering to the young people. But again, I found out from conversation with those who were in charge of Fusion that a lot of those who were coming there were young adults from other Seventh-day Adventist church. And the place was packed. But these were a lot of young adults from other Adventist churches who may not have found the programming at their church very appealing. And Fusion was the place to be. So they would come there, but then you wouldn't always find a lot of non-Adventist young adults who would come there. And consequently, we looked at it and said, this is good, and there's nothing wrong with a good programming, but we want to move in a direction where not only are we ministering to just other Adventists, there are people there who are lost in sin. There are many students at FIU and UMM. We sit right between there. How can we be missional and reach these individuals?
Okay. And for those who may be listening outside of the Florida region, which we do have, you know, several, FIU is Florida International University. And of course, UM is the Grand University of Miami, right? And if you're a football fan, definitely you would know about, you know, UM. So very close or fairly close to the actual church. And of course, you guys were trying to reach that, you know, community as well. You know, Pastor Morris, your thoughts.
When I got to the church, I noticed, you know, from my area of the discipleship and small groups that a lot of the church members were disconnected. So you had a large church where people were coming there for years, but there really wasn't any type of organic community. You know, as we mentioned, there was a lot of programs. And so people would show up to those programs, but after the programs on Sabbath, there was no genuine connections throughout the week. And so people, A, weren't growing together spiritually because they were disconnected, and B, they didn't have any support system. Okay. And so in the church, and they felt as though they were pretty much just lost.
Okay. So as you guys got together, the staff, the leaders of the church, and you saw, discussed, had a conversation about where the church was at the moment, what did you guys decide would be the vision, the mission that you guys brought forth or that you guys reinvigorated into that congregation? Let's start back with Pastor Lafitte.
We saw that the vision for the church was a committed community that was making disciples and serving globally. We want to serve the community, but we also want to serve the larger community, the world. And so our emphasis was making disciples through the context of small groups. So that's what we kind of came together.
Okay. Making disciples through the context of small groups. So how did that work out? Now, I know, obviously, I've been there. I've been honored to, you know, speak there. I've spoken to the small groups there and the leaders. So how did you guys begin to roll that out? We hear so much about small groups, and I often say to pastors and that ask me about church growth or just church members, not always just pastors. And personally, I have not seen a church of any denomination. Now, again, if somebody could tell me otherwise, I'm willing to, you know, listen and hear. But I have not seen a church that is growing in some shame form or manner that doesn't have some type of small groups and discipleship happening within those small groups. Is that fair to say? I mean, again, I haven't seen any church, again, either within our community of faith or without. And I pay attention. I read a lot. Attend other churches. I ask, you know, questions of, you know, pastors from other, you know, other places as well. And I haven't seen any church that is really growing that doesn't have some type of small groups. So as you guys made this part of your main, you know, vision, how did you guys begin to roll that out?
Well, first thing, you know, Pastor Thompson came a year after us.
Okay.
So Pastor Marsh and Wilney, our emphasis first was to lay a foundation of building the spirituality of the church. And we did that first through prayer meeting. We put our focus on prayer meeting, and then we put our focus on prayer, where now we have a 5 a.m. Tuesday morning prayer meeting at the church and also at Elder Wilney's home. And so that's what we focused on, local preaching, what it means to have their own personal spiritual life. And we started laying the foundation of small groups. And then the Lord provided Pastor Thompson when he came.
Okay.
The first thing we did, we started laying a foundation of spirituality, where we were teaching the church how to have their own spiritual walk through biblical preaching with Pastor Marsh and Elder Wilney. We taught the church members what it meant to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. And then we laid the foundation of small groups. And then we put an emphasis on prayer meeting, where we kind of revamped prayer meeting and told the church that prayer meeting is going to be the engine room for our spirituality in Miami Temple.
Mm.
And then we started Tuesday morning prayer meetings at 5 in the morning here at the church and at Elder Wilney's house. And
wow.
So we have prayer warriors that are meeting at 5 in the morning till 6 to pray, and then we go to work.
Hmm.
And then all this was laid down, and then the Lord provided Pastor Thompson to come in, and then he came with his plan and his vision.
So let me get this straight. You guys really started a little bit differently. Instead of coming in and just implementing another program, implementing and saying this is the vision, you really it seems like you focused more on the spirituality of the congregation that was there first and foremost, and then we're going to move forward as you lay that foundation. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Okay. What kind of response did you guys get with your morning prayer sessions at 5 o'clock, the, you know, revamped prayer meeting? You know, Miami is a city that is so busy. People are so busy, as they say, it's tough for them even to come to church once a week, let alone now come back on Wednesdays. So how did you get the folks to start actually coming? Did they even come?
They came. At first, you know, we had over 100 people coming to prayer meetings, and then we had over 50 coming to the Tuesday morning. And of course, when something is new and fresh, everyone's involved.
Sure.
But praise God, now we're averaging 50 to 60 for prayer meeting. And as far as the church is concerned, we have a group of 20, 25, 30 that still come consistently on Tuesday morning. Wilney can give a different perspective. He has people that come from the north, mm-hmm. and they go to his house.
Okay. What was that response, you know, that you had with the prayer meeting, Wilney, at 5 o'clock in the morning? I mean, who was waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning and coming to your home or coming to the church and praying for an hour?
Before I answer that, let me give you another perspective on prayer at the church.
Sure.
Before this team came, we had Wednesday night prayer meeting, but we were jumping up and down when we had 14 people show up on Wednesday night. I'm talking about 14.
Right.
And it was dismal, and it was sad. So now, when this team came, led by Pastor Lafitte, and we're having 100 or more, and now we've steadied around 50, 60, you can do the math. Went from a high of 14 to a low of 50. And at my house Tuesday mornings, you can have anywhere from 7 to 11 people coming at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So that's the change. We did not have that before. And I want to throw something else in. Another thing Pastor Lafitte did within 3 months of him being there, we went to a retreat where he cast a vision for the church and really kind of pushed the leaders to share their vision. It was a good meeting, and I think, knowing Miami Temple the way I do, that was needed, and he caught on that. And I think that began, you know, the small snowball running down the hill. So these two elements are super important: casting the vision, which our senior pastor did, and the prayer meetings that are occurring. And we still have Wednesday night meetings and Tuesday morning meetings, and they're all well attended.
Amen. Now that's very important what you just mentioned there, you know, Wilney, that Pastor Lafitte just left out. I'll say he forgot, but very important that he gathered all the leaders of the church and began there, because Miami Temple, what's the attendance, give or take, even before Lafitte came? I mean, what's the average there that will show up on a Saturday morning as we worship on Saturday mornings?
When we did the count on Saturdays before Pastor Lafitte came, was 500 to 600.
Okay.
Average.
Okay. So you had 500 to 600 coming, and then you had 14. Now, people can do the math and get that percentage of people showing up on a regular and average prayer meeting. And so the first thing that Pastor Lafitte did as he came is that he gathered the leaders. He infused the essence of reinvigorating one's own spiritual walk with the Lord. And he did that through prayer meeting, through prayer itself, and through the leadership. Is that fair to say, Pastor Gervon, Pastor Morris?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say. I would add, too, that the process has been, one, defining reality, helping the church to see where we are, two, raising spirituality. But then also, one of the reasons I believe that Wednesday night has been very successful is that we're actually addressing practical concerns of people. So each month we have a specific theme that we preach on, and Sabbaths somewhat are like the theory, and then on Wednesday night we sit and we look at real issues that people are facing. And we promote this through Facebook and other media so that people know what's going on. They bring their friends, they come. And I've seen, honestly, miracles at the church just from Wednesday night meetings.
Wow.
We don't just pray. When anyone has a burden, we form a circle around them. We lift them up to God in prayer. And we've had powerful testimonies. And that creates a snowball effect, because as people hear of how God has worked in other people's lives, they spread the word. And as the word spread, others come. We've had one gentleman who just walked off the street one night. He was nearby, and I guess he saw the light, he said, or something, and he just walked off the street. He's been coming pretty consistently since that, you know. His sister has been coming as well. So God is doing a great thing, but a lot of it is directly connected to the deliberate steps of defining reality, doing our part to raise spirituality, and making sure that we're speaking to the actual needs of the church.
Okay.
And speaking from the perspective of community as well, you know, prayer is one foundation for community. I think prayer meeting and that emphasis on prayer and connecting to God together has kind of led itself into what we do with small groups as well.
Okay. So I love that, defining reality, bringing in, you know, community, raising spirituality. And pastors, lay people, they're going to be listening to this podcast, and they're going to be thinking, here's Miami Temple, the largest English-speaking Seventh-day Adventist church in Miami, very large city, as we all know, a very unique large city, as many large cities have their own uniqueness, if I can say it that way. And yet somehow, at this point, the traditional Wednesday night prayer gathering is actually growing, which is not a usual and customary, you know, thing that is happening in your average church, I would say, again, unless somebody shows me differently. So it's incredible to hear that. It's really, especially in a city, in a big city like Miami. So as you guys were doing all that, Pastor Morris came, and again, Pastor Morris, you know, you and I have had many conversations and about small groups. And so how did that become or began, I should say, to be the heartbeat to some extent, along with what you guys were doing, of the church, where a lot of what you guys do now is based on small groups. So maybe I should start with, you know, Morris on this one.
You know, so as we laid that foundation for spirituality, well, I should say the leadership before I came, when I came in, I looked at the church and people wanted to grow spiritually. And so, you know, the obvious thing, you know, from what I understand, was having small groups, having them connect, having them build organic relationships with one another. And so what we did was we looked at finding leaders who wanted to lead in that area. And so, you know, did what Nehemiah did, surveyed the walls, met with people, prayed, And over a course of time, God brought up leaders who fit the criteria for small group leaders. And so what I did was I started small groups in which I trained these leaders. You know, I spent time with them, poured into them, and I set them out. And they started to plant small groups. And I was very intentional about what type of leaders I selected and where they were located, because in the larger scheme of things, we had people coming from the north, we had people coming in from the south, so we needed a place for everyone to be discipled.
So how many did you start with? And we've already heard a couple of north and south, people coming from the north and south. So just to help people who, again, may not be from the Florida region, Miami Temple, like many churches in these day and age, is essentially a drive-in church. Is that fair to say? Most people drive in. They don't live necessarily in the immediate community of where the church building where you all worship is at. Is that correct? You know, Wilney, you've been there a long time.
Yes. It's a commuter church.
Okay.
For example, I drive. It can take me anywhere from 25 to 40 minutes to get to church, depending on traffic. If traffic is really bad, it has taken me 2 hours on a weekday to get there if the Palmetto is backed up.
Wow.
That's a major thoroughfare.
Welcome to Miami, huh? That's Miami. There you go. So with that, just so that people know, Lafitte, I mean, he encouraged this. He was open to this. And so, Morris, as you came and you began instituting with the help of the small groups, how many did you start with as people were spreading out and meeting in the different areas of the community?
Well, in the first few months, we started with about 25 groups. And then from there, we spread out. And by the end of the first year I was there, we had about 50 small groups.
50 small groups. So in total, how many people were you meeting with those small groups? Another 50 small groups. How many in total would you say, give or take, were involved?
Each group averaged a size of anywhere between 5 members to 15.
Okay.
So I would say, if I do some, you know, rough estimates, I would say almost half the church was involved in small groups in one form or shape.
Okay. Now, see, that's where we want to stop for a second. I mean, to have half of a church that averages about, give or take, 600 in attendance is a powerful testimony. But what do you guys think, or what do you attribute to having such a high response to people joining small groups? Any person, any one of you.
I'll jump into that one.
Sure.
Miami Temple, like every other church, Adventist church, I should say, got the small group thing back in the late 90s when everybody was doing it. Mm-hmm. But over the years, one thing I've noticed, we would start and would stop. We've never been able to sustain. Now that we have a pastor specifically dedicated to small groups, I think that made a difference. Pastor Morris's job, part of his job, is to encourage small group, visit small group, and train small group leaders. From my perspective, that made a big difference.
Okay. Was each of the pastors, the three pastors, were you guys all involved in small groups? Was it just, you know, Morris, Gervon, did you lead your own small group? Were you involved in a small group? How did you guys work that out?
Well, we're all involved in a small group in some way or shape or form. For example, our Tuesday morning meetings, I attend the one at Wellness Health. That is our small group now. And the beauty about it is, of course, you build relationships and you create bonds. And these are going to be lifetime bonds, of course. But we take turns. Wilney and I, we take turns in directing and leading the group. All of us are involved in some way, shape, or form, whether it's the eldership or the pastorship.
And how long did they go for? Do they go for until Jesus comes? So they're still going? Is there a break? So what was the plan, just for those that may be listening, what kind of plan did you guys come in with and say, okay, this is how we're going to be intentional about doing small groups, discipleship? What was the thought process, you know, through that?
Well, you know, we came in and we set a time limit for a year. So small group would last a year. Now, you know, of course, we're all still learning the whole process and things like that, but we noticed that it would tire out a lot of leaders. So what we did was I sat with the leadership and I said, okay, guys, we're gonna set a small group calendar year. And so I said, pick a time limit, either 3 months, 6 months, or 8 months. But you have to pick one, stop, take a break, and then pick up again. So I had some small groups that would last for 3 months. I had some small groups that would last for 6 months. I had some that would last for 8 months. But they'd always have a break in between group meetings that extended maybe a month or 2 months.
Okay. Did each group, what was the content that what happened in the small group? Was did you guys all study a certain topic, subject? Was it just an affinity group where people just went and they went with whatever their hobby or their favorite thing to do was? So what did the group consist of for those that may be asking as they listen to this?
Well, you know, Javier, that's a very good question because, you know, what we started off with was trying to get all the groups studying the exact same thing and doing the exact same thing. So we gave out Serendipity Bibles and we asked them all to meet within a group, but what we noticed is that not everyone grew spiritually that way. And so what we did was we started to point out specific leaders who had particular hobbies, skills, things they like to do, which they could form a group around. And so we had a mixture of affinity groups where people cycled together, and that's how they created groups. I know Elder Wilney had a diving group, and you know everyone who liked to dive, they brought their friends from outside the church, and people within the church came together. Tennis, and now they split and made two groups that play tennis. And they bring people from Florida International University, University of Miami, to come and play tennis. We have some groups that study the Bible together from the point of women in Scripture and how women are discipled. We have one group that studies it from the point of how men are discipled. So we have a mixture of different types of groups studying different things. And that's helped out because there's something for everybody.
Wow. So it was a pretty expansive work of small groups here. It wasn't just one type of small group. It was really multiple, just affinity groups of different kinds you had, and also just your typical, and if I can use the word, you know, typical Bible study small group. But amongst all of that, I would venture to say, and you guys could correct me, a big part of that was to develop strong community that will also empower discipleship. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, yeah. You know, Javier, oftentimes people, you know, church pastors, they want small groups, but like you said earlier, we had to lay down that foundation for biblical spirituality, and that started to grow. The small groups really grew because we had that, because people were growing spiritually, you know, in that.
Okay.
Also, another thing we've noticed right now with our small group at Miami Temple, quite a few of them have non-Adventist attending. Hmm. They still don't come to our church, but they come to our small group. For example, we had a divorce recovery group that I ran, and three of the women who came there don't come to our church. One or two of them started coming on and off, and I'm not the only group. That's not the only group where you had non-Adventists coming. So that's another thing that's happening with all groups, non-Adventists coming just because they enjoy the company. I just spoke to someone last week and referred them to a small group. They're not Adventists. They don't come to our church, but they promised me they will attend that small group because that small group will meet a specific need of theirs.
Okay. So that's powerful, and that's a great transition. So as you guys were doing these small groups, obviously you were able to invite people of different faiths or people of no faith, and that was a big part. Invite, as was already mentioned, your friends, family members, whoever that may you know be. Now, as I said before, Miami Temple is the largest English-speaking Seventh-day Adventist church in Miami. Now, again, those outside of our community of faith or those outside of the Florida region will understand, and most people know, if you've been to Miami, that oftentimes the joke is that some places say, we speak English. right? Because most places, Spanish is just a regular aspect there. Everybody speaks Spanish in Miami, but everybody does also, as the second and third generations are growing up. English continues to rise. Many Spanish churches in the area, Adventist Spanish churches, have English services as well. But as the specific largest English church, it's in a multicultural church. Would you guys agree? Miami Temple is a very multicultural church. Yes, yes?
It is. Yes, it is a highly multicultural church.
Okay. But according to the U.S. Census, and it's no surprise to anyone, the community is about 68% Hispanic in Miami. Again, nobody is shocked to hear that. But yet there's second and third generation Hispanics that are essentially American-born, English-speaking group that are becoming harder to reach. So what are you guys doing to reach that demographic? And do you believe that through small groups that has been perhaps one very powerful way to reach that demographic? What are your thoughts on that? Anyone?
The main reason why we've grown is because of the small groups. The reality of the community of Miami Temple, mm-hmm. we did a study last year where we found that 6% of the people that live around Miami Temple is white, 4% is black, and 90% are Latinos. Okay. That's the truth. So what we did, we have a Spanish Sabbath school that has over 100 members right now. Mm. So we're thinking of transitioning into a Spanish service, but before we did that, we started two services. We have a 10 o'clock service, which is our traditional Sabbath service. We call it Elevate. And then we have a 12:30 service, which is contemporary. It's trying to reach the unchurched. It's trying to reach young adults. We have a lot of college students that come to that one because it's at a later service. But the truth of the matter is that the visitors that we're getting is because they are connected to a small group.
Okay. So the result of changing your services and going to two services and adding the Hispanic Sabbath school time, which has 100 people now, you say. So all of that came from, again, studying and understanding first what was going on. And then that was implemented as a result of what you guys saw and how the small groups were then growing. And it seems like that calls for continued change and adaptability to be able to reach the people that you guys were reaching through small groups. Is that fair to say?
That's correct. Because we noticed, like many churches, at 11:30, you get that major rush from all the churches nearby. And so we wanted committed Adventists to be part of Miami Temple. So now you have to be committed to either a 10 in the morning service or a 12:30 service. And so in between, we have Sabbath school. And so that now has helped us with developing leaders, because now we have committed people that are coming that have brought into the division.
Okay. I think, in case anybody may have, and then I'll let you go, Wilney, how did people react with the one big English-speaking Seventh-day Adventist community of faith now having a Spanish Sabbath school of 100 people? How did the neighboring churches, particularly of our faith, react? What was their response? Was it that's fine as you're reaching people? What was their response?
Well, the response was, hey, you're ministering to the people in your neighborhoods. That's fine. But the idea actually came from an Anglo member of our church whose family is one of the pioneers of Miami Temple. He's the one that said, Pastor, we have Latinos all around us. What are we going to do to reach them? And so that's what started the ball rolling as far as let's be intentional in having a Spanish service in Miami Temple.
Hmm. Wilney, your thoughts. You were going to say something. I'm sorry.
Two quick points I wanted to make. Also remember, even though Miami Temple is a primary Anglo church, we have over 70 different nationalities and cultures. That's 70. And in the past, we've had some issues dealing with that, but lately we've been doing very well. And Pastor Lafitte said something that's very, very important. And my perspective as a member of the church, as a head elder, the word commitment has been an issue in Miami Temple for years. So we'd have a lot of people coming, but not many committed. And if you were to ask me the number one thing I appreciate about this pastoral team, there seems to be a systematic work, whether it's intended or not, of getting commitment from people. And for me, I really, really appreciate that, because as I notice the people around, I'm seeing a gradual increase, ever so slow, in commitment. And I think the more commitment we have, the more committed people we have at Miami Temple, I mean, it's going to blow up. The giant will wake up. But we've always had an issue of commitment around Miami Temple. A lot of attenders, but a lot of people involved in programs. And Pastor Gavon said it earlier, you know, a bunch of people coming to one youth service, but zero commitment. And we were fighting and struggling to get people to do anything. Now that ship is turning around. We're getting more and more committed people. And as an outsider looking in into the pastoral staff, I think that's their greatest accomplishment, getting committed people.
Hmm. You know, Wilney, you just hit on a very, 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 very specific point there. And part of that is the commitment. You know, I think every church that I've attended, and I've attended many over the last year plus here in Florida, would say that they struggle with getting people to commit. And there's a few churches that I've been to that I can tell have a good, for us, Saturday morning attendance. But then when you look into the life of the church, it's the old adage that 20% or less of the people do 100% of the work, right? And it seems that Miami Temple wasn't any different than that until now, until the last couple of years. And would you attribute that? So I'm going to ask you, Wilney, being that you were there before and you have all that time of knowing what has happened in the past, would you attribute that to the fact that the leadership was really intentional on getting commitment, is what I'm hearing you say?
And that's a very good word. And from my perspective, looking at them, the intention has been gradual. Mm-hmm. And when Pastor Lafitte came in, I had no doubt in my mind that he intended to get people committed. One of the things he told me, I don't even remember. I don't know if he remembers telling me this, but he says to me, "Hey, I'm not going to do this alone." He says, "I need an army. I need soldiers." Remember that? To work with me. So I immediately picked up on, okay, this is not a one-man show. He wants an army. And when the other two pastors joined him, well, actually, Pastor Gavon came one Sabbath before, as he so stately stated, but when the team gelled together in a team of three, there is a drive to get people committed. So it is intentional. And as the outsider looking in, and I listen to the voices of the people, I see the gradual. It's only been 2 years, so but I still see a gradual increase in people talking to me. They are more interested in doing something as opposed to before they were just there. So the commitment is increasing.
Okay. Well, praise the Lord, and I think people are going to really benefit from listening to that, because it seems like there comes a time that every leadership in a congregation needs to really move forward in doing through God's Spirit, leading to people committing. And it takes time and it takes effort. It takes intentionality. It's not something that happens overnight, as many of us, you know. And again, I'm a little biased here because I've spoken to you guys and I've preached there. I've met often with, you know, Morris and talked about small groups. So I see part of what you guys are doing there to some degree. So with that said, as you're getting this response, and this may seem a no-brainer, perhaps I already asked this in a different way, but I think it's a good follow-up because this is so important, because we can't do it alone. We all know this. And it's not about us. It's not about a certain leader. It's about God's people coming together, making disciples and growing God's kingdom. Amen. I think that's what I'm hearing you guys say in simple words. So why do you think people were responding or have responded more than they had in previous years? And this is, even though you guys have only been there for a short time, But this is a question for all of you guys. Why do you think people were responding? I think I know why, but I'm holding back here from answering that question in my perhaps 10,000 foot view. But Pastor Gavon, Morris, what do you guys thought? You guys are reaching out to perhaps a younger audience, a younger congregation, a younger demographic. So why do you think they have been responding more?
One of the things I believe that's contributed to that is the approach where we're very intentional about who is placed where. I remember talking with Pastor Levine, and he said, we need the right people on the bus. And you'd be amazed to know how that changes everything. So we've had people in positions where they were there because, people thought they were qualified. But when you looked at their spiritual gifts test, that's one of the things we did. We have given all members, for the most part, a spiritual gifts test. And we want them to outline clearly, what are their gifts? What are their leadership styles? Things like these. And then we found that when people understood what their gifts were and how these could be used in the church, you had leaders who told us, I don't feel comfortable here even though I was elected. This is what I want to do. And the minute you put them in that position, it's like they're just exploding with ideas and with concepts and with doing what they really want to do. So that's one of the critical things, getting the right people in the right place. And that means helping them to understand what their gifts are. Mm-hmm. We did the spiritual gifts test, what their leadership styles are, and then equipping them to serve in those areas.
So Jim Collins was correct, right, on his book, what is it, good to great? Having the right people on the bus, let's give him the credit, because he seems to have hit it on the nail. And you guys followed through with that. And now I'm just kind of speaking here. Again, I always say these are conversations, and we kind of sometimes don't stick to the actual script here that I give out. But too often, could it be that churches, they want to move to the next level in discipleship and growing God's kingdom, but there's people on that bus that aren't driving it to the proper place? I mean, is that fair to say?
Totally accurate.
That is correct. To answer your question about intentionality, not only were we preaching intentional sermons, but the pastoral staff started visiting the members as a team. And as Pastor Gravon was mentioning, we would have frank conversations with the member. And letting them know, listen, for example, you may be the Pathfinder director, but you're not succeeding as a Pathfinder director. Let's help you. Let's refocus you. Let's reshift you according to your spiritual gifts and your passions. And we had one incident where actually with the Pathfinder director, where he admitted to us, said, look, I'm going to step down because I need to work on my spirituality. Mm. And so he stepped down, and the associate director took over, and that Pathfinder Club now has thrived. But this particular person is in another position where he is on a spiritual high. He's calling me weekly, giving me ideas, giving me suggestions, and he is on fire for the Lord. And one of his comments to me last week was like, Pastor, I finally get it. I get what you've been saying for the past 2 years. See, that would have never happened if the pastoral staff never had that one-to-one in his home. Mm. And so we're attacking from two fronts, from the pulpit, but also in the home.
That's a powerful thing. I hear as a person, again, who visits many churches and it's part of the aspect of getting pastors for, churches in our region here in Florida. We hear that about pastors not visiting their church members. And I understand, right? A pastor is not just about visiting their church members. And I understand what that sometimes, how people take that. But in this instance, what I'm hearing you say, Lafitte, is that you guys were not only intentional, as you said, from the pulpit, but you were intentional, going back to what, Gervon said, and those people that were driving the bus and meeting with them one-on-one and telling them, perhaps you need some driver's ed classes. Yeah. Now, for those, obviously, this is an audio, but these guys, I'm watching them on the video and they're all laughing when I said that. And so, perhaps many churches aren't doing what you guys are doing in the sense of speaking. But I love how you put it, Lafitte, is you're not driving the bus correctly, but how can I help you so that you can drive correctly. It's not just about, hey, I'm going to take you out of being Pathfinder leader or whatever it may be, but it's about how can we help you. Is that, did you feel that, you know, Wilney, as a you're a leader there, obviously, but did you feel that from the rest of the congregation, like these guys were coming in and they were trying to help those other leaders who perhaps weren't doing their, you know, job as intended?
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking just about that. One of the things I really appreciated about these pastors was there was a time there within a year of them coming, I could tell that there were some leaders who were a round peg in a square hole, and they were able to intervene, which I've worked with many pastors, and a lot of pastors are timid into intervening when a leader is going the wrong way. And these pastors intervened and actively encouraged some leaders to kind of find another ministry. And it was needed at the time. So whoever's listening to this broadcast, I want to encourage them. There comes a time when a leader, a pastor, needs to intervene if the bus driver is heading the wrong way. Sometimes, you know, prayer helps, but a direct intervention, whether it's even visiting them. And I know Pastor Lafitte has personally consulted me and said, hey, this leader, I think, is in the wrong side of the bus. What can we do to move them? And we talked about that, and it happened. To me, that was a very, very strategic move in placing the right people in the right ministries and redirecting them. And that really, really helped our church.
Okay. You know, it's like Andy Stanley one time spoke about is that, and I'll change the, you know, highway to make it more for Miami, but if you're on the turnpike going north, you can pray until Jesus comes, because if you have to go south, you can pray and say, Lord, show me how to go south. Show me where I should go. And if the Lord is showing you, go south, but if you still keep on going north, you can pray until Jesus comes. Eventually, you got to exit, turn around, and start going south back towards Miami.
And exactly.
I think that's what I'm hearing you guys, you know, say. Let me shift a little bit, but within the same aspect of church growth and the growth there at Miami Temple. We, as a conference, as a region here in our community of faith, we're planting a lot of churches in different areas. Do you guys see a church plant coming out of Miami Temple? Will it be a church plant? Do you guys see maybe not necessarily a church plant, but perhaps another group that meets somewhere else, but you're all together as one, you know, church? Having another campus, you know, church, as some churches do, particularly outside of our community of faith. You know, churches, large churches, will have church campuses in different regions, but they're one, you know, church. You don't see that as often within the Adventist, you know, within our Adventist community. But is that something that you guys have thought about maybe in the future? What are your thoughts about that? And I'll start with Pastor Lafitte on this one.
Well, that's the direction that we're heading. We're not thinking so much of planting with one of the first Adventist churches that have multi-site campuses. We see that around us here in the South, where we have Christian Fellowship and other churches that use the multi-site campus. Mm-hmm. And even in the Adventist world, the NAD is experimenting with simple church, where there's members that meet in the homes and they send their tithes to the conference. That's something that I want to play with, because we have a lot of members live as far as Broward and Miramar, and we would like them to be involved in disciple making, because what happens is people that live far, they are commuting to the church, but they're not discipling their community. Mm-hmm. And so being a multi-site church, we're going to give them the opportunity to disciple their neighbors and then help them grow, and when they're ready, they can bring them to Miami Temple maybe once a month. We can have a special program. But I'm thinking of activating our members in being a multi-site campuses all over South Florida.
Okay. So that's something. What are your guys' thoughts on that, having a multi-site campus? You know, some people will be listening and say, so if you live in Broward County, and again, that's far away from Miami Temple, why not just go to another Adventist church in Broward County, some may argue. So what are you guys' thoughts on that?
I'll give you an example. I live on the other end of Dade County. I'm about a minute away from the Broward line, which is regularly 30 minutes from Miami Temple. I have two or three neighbors I want to invite to church, but they would have to drive 30 to 40 minutes to go to church with me. Right around the corner is a home church, Christ Fellowship. You see what I'm saying? They have that available to them. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a Miami Temple North I can invite them to? So I think that's a great idea, being such a wide area commuter church. I think it's a wonderful idea that we should definitely plan toward. It would work from my perspective.
Hmm. What are you guys' thoughts, Morris or, you know, Gervon?
Well, I think it will work simply for the reason that you're giving the same worship and discipleship experience to other members in further out from Miami Temple and Broward or North Miami-Dade that can't necessarily commute to church every single Sabbath or every single prayer meeting, or, you know, and they also have a sense of community there because they can connect with other Miami Temple members who live in that area. So they don't feel as though they're on the outskirts of the community of Miami Temple simply because they don't live closer to most of the other members.
Okay.
I think the multi-campus idea is a great idea for a number of reasons. One, we have a lot of millennials who come to our church, and while they like big groups, they also like to be in more intimate settings, and this will provide a great opportunity for that. Another issue also has to do with the fact that many of the people who are coming to our church, the non-Adventist friends, they don't have an issue with a big service at 11 o'clock, but we have learned from our small group situation that you only build community and intimacy when people are able to come together in small groups and in close, intimate settings. So that will provide an opportunity for us to do that. And let's face it also, Miami is a very crowded place. Most of the Adventist churches down here are crowded. It's easy for people to get lost in these big churches or in these big services. How do you avoid that or prevent that? We create these cell groups, small satellite groups, where people, when they come, they're not just a number in a crowd. They're now a part of a group where it's easy to call my name, to identify my face, and to start building relationships with me. And because we're trying to build community, that's the way to go.
Okay. I wanted to ask you guys as we close here, and again, this a lot of good stuff going on here that people can contemplate on regardless of what church they go to, of what's happening there at Miami Temple, and how powerful what you guys have done, are doing, and will continue to do there. But what if you can summarize it in maybe one or two quick points, each of you. What are some of the lessons that you guys have learned or perhaps have been reemphasized through this ongoing process of change towards mission there at Miami Temple? So let me start again. One or two points that as you guys have been going through this process that you can say, you know, this is something I've learned or perhaps it's been reemphasized in your leadership. So let me start with the senior pastor.
3 points. The first one is intentionality. Intentional in our preaching, intentional in our leading. The second thing is teamwork. There's no way we can do this without a team. And of course, the third thing, which is the first thing, is to bathe everything in prayer, through prayer, lifting it up, making sure that the personal relationship with God is the first thing, because that's what's going to drive everything.
Okay. All right. Siobhan.
Yeah, one of the things that has been reinforced for me is the importance, I said it earlier, of having the right people in the right places, because it makes our jobs so much easier when we have people who are skilled in specific areas or gifted in specific areas working where they should be working. It reduces our frustration at the pastoral level. It reduces their frustration. And in turn, it trickles down to all other departments where people are now comfortable doing what they love to do, what God has gifted them to do, and it makes church a lot more easier.
All right. Morris.
I think one of the things that I got out of the experience is the theme of leadership and the importance of training leaders, you know, continuing to grow and develop leaders both in their skill set and spiritually as well. You know, oftentimes we bring in leaders and we say, okay, we want you to lead this ministry, we want you to do this, we want you to do that. But there's not really a track of how they grow. You know, there's no real curriculum. So empowering leaders, training them, pouring into them so they can serve God better.
Okay. And Wilton, your thoughts?
And it's nice to know that we have a sense of direction. We know where we're going. And we have leaders who are willing to take the risks to lead us there. But it's not just a risk. It's a calculated risk because those risks are bathed in prayer. And I really, really appreciate that Head Elder, I have a team of pastors who are leading us somewhere. I have a sense of where we're going. That helps a lot.
Praise the Lord. Well, thank you guys for taking of your time and sharing with us a little bit of the story of what's happening at Miami Temple. I've been, in the last several podcasts, I've finished with some fun questions. So I want to ask you at least one of those fun questions, and that is deferred. But being that you guys are in the Miami area, of course, there tends to be quite a few very good places to eat in Miami. So tell me, first thing that comes to your mind, what is your favorite place to eat? Lafitte, go.
Versailles.
Where is that?
Cuban restaurant there.
Versailles. Okay, Versailles, yes. Gervon, favorite place to eat?
Calle 8.
Yes, in Calle 8. Very, as a matter of fact, it's one of the places that if you visit Miami, you need to go, right, and visit Versailles.
Yes, sir.
Gervon, favorite place to eat in Miami?
My favorite place is Sublime. It's a vegan restaurant, totally legit. It's actually in Fort Lauderdale, but I hear they have something, but Sublime, you got to try it, Sublime.
Okay.
Yeah.
You just committed the first sin. You said it's in Fort Lauderdale, not in Miami, but we'll forgive you. We'll forgive you.
He's
Fort Lauderdale is another world. It's not Miami. Come on now.
Got to
drive to Fort Lauderdale. All right, Morris, favorite place to eat in Miami?
In Miami. All right. I Isla del Encanto.
What is
it's
it?
A Puerto Rican restaurant.
Okay, Puerto Rican restaurant. And what's it called again?
Isla del Encanto.
Isla del Encanto.
Yeah.
Yeah, you better work on that Spanish, man. Work on that Spanish. All right. Wilney, your favorite, you've been there for a while, and I know you live in the border there, but in Miami, favorite place to eat in Miami?
A place called Sawa. It's a Mediterranean restaurant in the Gables.
Okay, all right. And, of course, you're going to say, what about you? Because, obviously, we know Miami. My wife and I are from there, or my wife is from there, I should say. I would say Sergio. Sergio's is one of our favorite places to eat, and you guys can find it on just Google all this stuff if you guys want to find out if you're ever going to Miami. Before we let you guys go, I always ask also if people want to get a hold of you guys to talk more about what's going on at Miami Temple, how can they do so? So, Lafitte, let's start with you. What's the best way for people to get a hold of you? And I'm talking about, you know, Facebook, social media, email. You don't have to – we're not asking you to give out your phone number, but things of that nature. I mean, if you want to give it out, go ahead. I don't recommend that, but go ahead.
No. Facebook is the best place. I'm always there. So it's Lafitte, L-A-F-F-I-T, Cortez, C-O-R-T-E-S.
Okay. Gervon, best way to get a hold of you?
Shoot me an email. It's Gervon Marsh, G-E-R-V-O-N-M-A-R-S-H, at yahoo.com.
All righty. And Morris?
Email, it's Thompson Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S, number 0, at gmail.com.
Okay. And Wilney, best way to get a hold of you?
Wilney Ordain. It's my full name. Wilney, WILNYAUDAIN at gmail.com.
Excellent. Well, there you go. Thank you, fellas, for your time, and thank you for the story. And I pray that as people listen, it will be beneficial to those who will. Blessings on your continued journey to make Miami Temple the missional church that it's been called to be and to grow God's kingdom in the wonderful city of Miami. God bless you all.
Well, I hope that you were blessed, inspired, and perhaps even challenged by what you heard through the ongoing story at Miami Temple. It really has been and is an incredible story of how God has led that staff and that congregation, and I want to continue for us to pray for them. With that said, if you have any questions regarding this episode, the others, or a topic that you would like for us to explore, you can reach me at Javier, that's J-A-V-I-E-R, that Diaz, D-I-A-Z, at floridaconference.com. Also, don't forget to check our Restore Conference website at restorethemission.com. That's restorethemission.com, and register for the conference. Please continue to share our podcasts and subscribe. Until next month, may we continue to restore the mission. God bless.
Thank you for listening to this Restore podcast. We hope you've been blessed. Don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss any of our inspiring episodes.